And I do think that, you know, a lot of it is mental. Like I've, you know, like in a long ultra, you go through so many like peaks and valleys, and so much of it is mental. Like that last 100K I did, I was in a kind of like the pain cave for a minute, and then we were doing a down back section, and I was going back, and some of my friends were going out, and I saw them, and then all of a sudden I felt amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, it just like lifted my spirits, you know. And I was like, well, that was all mental. It wasn't really physical, you know.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest for this episode is Sarah McMahon. She is an ultra runner. She is a blogger, an author, and a poet. She's just about to run her first 100-mile race in a truly epic location. Our conversation is coming up, but first I want to give you an update on what's happening here at the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. First off, the show notes now have their own website URL. You can go to ultramindsetpodcast.run. And it will take you directly there instead of having to go click through a bunch of menu options. Ultramindsetpodcast.run. Also, there is a place on the show notes page for comments, questions, and stories. Ultramindsetpodcast.run is the same place to find that. You can leave written message or you can leave a voice message. And we're going to be doing some interesting things, I think, with a voice messaging application. It's a new service I got. And I got some ideas. So stay tuned for some interesting things for that. I'm looking for some good stories. Also, I am looking to add sponsors. This will be the spot where the sponsors will have, will be talking about things that I have tried out myself, things that I believe in, I can put my name to and recommend with full confidence that the products work the way they say. I am presently buying and testing products, and I'm looking forward to talking about them. Some of them have worked really, really well. If you've ever read the book Born to Run, you know about the Tarahumara people of Mexico and all the wild country that they run in. That was a great book. I enjoyed the read. Sarah McMahon has chosen the Copper Canyon 100 for her first 100-mile race. She's going to be running in some truly epic and really beautiful country. In this episode, we talk about running, eating disorders, and her book of poetry that she's titled, I Like It Cause It's Pink. Here's my conversation with Sarah McMahon. Would like for you to talk a little bit, Sarah, about yourself and how did you get started as a runner and then and then moving into ultramarathons?
Yeah, I've been running a long time. I think I started when I was 12. One of my good friends was like, hey, come out for the cross country team. And I said, yes, but I didn't know what it was. So I showed up the first day of practice and we just ran. And I was like, is this it? That's kind of where I got my feet wet. I was in sixth grade and I had the same coach from sixth grade all the way through like high school. The same guy. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. So, you know, small town vibes for sure. So when I got to high school, I kind of figured out I was pretty good at it, and then got a scholarship to run in college. I ran at Bradley University, which is in Illinois, and no one's ever heard of it, so don't feel bad.
Small town, small college, huh?
Small college. It was a Division I college, but it was pretty small. There was about 6,000 students. So I was there for 5 years, and then I ended up moving to California, and that's kind of where I found trail running. I think the first time I ran on trails, I was like, people do this? Like, this is so crazy. It's, like, steep and technical, and, like, I was like, how do I run on this? And then I just kind of, like, got into, you know, like, oh, I want to see how far I can run. So my first ultra was a 50-miler in Big Bear, California, and then I just continued from there.
Yeah. Well, running in California, I would imagine there's quite a bit of elevation gain. I mean, you know, there's a lot of 50 milers in the Midwest where it's not exactly flat, but I've seen some of those trails out there in California. You guys got some pretty big hills.
Yeah. I think that one in Big Bear, I was like 10,000 feet over 50 miles. So it's okay. A lot of Yeah, and that's in the mountains too. But I mean, even by, I live by the coast and there's trails here, but they're very like steep and rolling and stuff. So yeah.
Lots yeah. 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 Well, and descents too. I imagine there's, that, yes. It works your legs, works your legs both directions. So you were running, you started running trail races and your first was a 50.
That's my cat. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. The cat just walked right in front of you. Your first one was a 50 mile. Then what did you do after that? Did you, like a lot of people go, oh, that's great. But then have you done 100? Is that?
Yeah, I'm actually, I have a 100 miler on the docket for this fall. I'm going to Mexico, actually, the Copper Canyon. Where?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Have you
that
heard
one.
Of the, yeah, the car yeah. tomorrow. I'm going to go down and run that 100 miler. So that'll be my first one. I had one planned for last year, but COVID happened and then wildfires okay. happened and it got canceled. And so, so yeah, I've done, I think, 250 milers and 300 Ks.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of the progression. People, you know, in the trail running community, a lot of times you get encouraged to like, oh, do the next distance, do the next mm-hmm. distance. And so was that kind of what you, I mean, you got, I imagine got into a trail running community there.
Yeah, I found a really great group. We run every Wednesday, we meet and run, and then often like run together on the weekends. And it's just, well, it's nice to have a community to do this stuff with, because often we're training for like hours at a time. You know, we go do like a big mountain run and it'll take a lot of time. So, so yeah. And I think too, just like the progression, it's like I did my 50 milers and then I was like, well, I know what that distance feels like. I want to try something longer and figure out what that feels like. So my first 100, I'm just kind of figuring out what 100 miles feels like, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll work on getting faster later.
Well, I mean, and from what I've seen of the, I've only seen, you know, just clips of the race down in Mexico in the Copper Canyon. That looks like it's a pretty, that's a little bit more than just the mountains in California. That's a pretty rugged looking race. And of course, I mean, I read the book Born to Run. I mean,
yeah, and, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you train for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. The last race I did was just a couple weeks ago in Utah called Tushers. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's similarly like, so it starts at 10,000 feet and it goes up to 12 and the whole race is like pretty much above 10,000 feet. So the hardest part for us at sea level is just acclimating, you know, to the elevation and stuff. So I went to Colorado for a month this summer and just trained up there. I stayed with a friend and trained at elevation and did a bunch of like technical mountain runs to try to get ready for that race. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it just, I go to the mountains every weekend. I train in the mountains, like back to back long runs, just to like get used to the climbing. I mean, I don't know what the terrain is quite like in Mexico, so it'll be a little bit of a shot in the dark. I do know there are some big climbs, like a big 6,000 foot climb. And I know it's like, you know, more rugged than the trails here. And it's even the mountains here, like, I mean, so many people go to the mountains in California that like the path is like pretty apparent. It's not like very rugged, you know, because so many people are on them all the time. But yeah, I mean, mostly just a lot of climbing and spending a lot of time on my feet.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you, I just was thinking about going to, I've never done a race, you know, out of the country. And what kind of support do they provide? And, you know, how do you get ready for that kind of, taking what to take and how to be able to get what you need along the trail?
That's a good question. I do know that, so they have aid stations every 6 to 12 miles along the course, and it does seem like, you know, we'll have drop bags, but I don't have a crew or pacers or anything like that, because I mean, I was not going to ask anybody to go to Mexico with me. They replaced me in Mexico. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'll be kind of just doing it alone. And they do offer like certain foods, you know, kind of like their traditional food. So that's like the nutrition is going to be a little different. I'm gonna have to bring my own, like electrolytes and probably my own, like, you know, like chews or whatever, cause they don't have that stuff like we do in America, or they're not going to offer it, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, one of the things that I didn't say about you is that you are a blogger and a poet. And that you've written extensively about some of your life, some of the challenges that you have faced in your life. So what brought you into poetry and being a blogger?
Yeah, I guess I started writing like for fun around the same time I started writing, like in sixth grade. I had a teacher who every week she'd like write like a story, and that was like our weekend assignment, and then we would submit it the next weekend. And I was like, oh, this is really fun. Like I mentioned, I grew up in rural northwestern Wisconsin, so we didn't really have – I didn't have like cable or anything. We had like five channels on TV, and my computer was like slow dial-up, like ancient computer. So I kind of read for fun, and I think that's why I started to write. So yeah, and I studied English once I got to college, and it just – I've just been something I've been doing for a long time. And I've been blogging now for like – about 3 years. And I started my blog because I had an eating disorder and I just felt like, I don't know, I wanted to like write about it in a way that might, you know, help other people. And it just seemed like a good starting point for my blog. And I've kind of like expanded what I write about because of how much can you say about an eating disorder? You know, I post twice a week. So it's like, I kind of got tired of talking about it. But it's been fun. It's kind of made me practice writing, I guess, because I stick to my twice a week schedule of posting. And so it's kind of like I'm practicing writing, but other people can read it.
Yeah, that's true. You talked about an eating disorder. Were you still running while you had the eating?
Yeah. It got really bad in college. I mean, you can imagine a lot of runners and other athletes in sports that kind of emphasize leanness have this issue where they kind of fall into disordered habits. Mine got really bad. Like I had hip surgery 1 year, and so I had to take time off of running, and I like my whole world just kind of crumbled because I was like not an athlete anymore. I wasn't competing, and that'd been my life for so long. And so I lost a bunch of weight. I got down to like under 100 pounds. And what's crazy is I was struggling with disordered eating for like years before this, but then all of a sudden people could like see it, you know, they could see how tiny I was getting, and then people were concerned. And then I went to a treatment. I was in therapy for like 5 years. I worked closely with dietitians along the way. I think it's really common in the running world to have disordered habits. I don't think it's as common for it to get as bad as mine did, because I was not only starving myself, but I would like, if I ate something, it would like make myself throw up. And I was taking like laxatives and diet pills and all sorts of stuff. Like my body was not in any way healthy, and my liver was actually shutting down. So that's like one of the reasons that I had to seek treatment.
Wow. Yeah. And you continued to run. Were you competitive? Was this while you were in school? She said it was while you were in school as well. So you were competing.
Yeah, I was competing up until my hip injury, and then I redshirted a year for surgery. And then I came back for my like super senior year, they call it, you know, my fifth year. And mm-hmm. That's when I got my master's. And so I was still running. When I came back, though, from my surgery, I was definitely not as fast. I was still struggling with the ramifications of being hurt. And also the eating disorder was like getting really bad at that time. I was sort of competing, I guess. Not
very. So what are the things, I mean, you're writing about eating disorder. What are the things that people need to people who might be like on the borderline of that, or somebody who doesn't have eating disorder need to understand to be helpful for some, you know, to be able to help somebody who's in that spot?
Yeah. Probably the biggest misconception is that, Like I kind of alluded to earlier, nobody like really was concerned until they could see myself like shrinking. So you can't really see it. It's a mental disorder, you know, and it's sort of it's complex because it's rooted in all sorts of things that you. It's not just about food, is what I'm trying to say. I guess it's like mm-hmm. like mine was like a control mechanism, and also kind of like rooted in trauma and stuff. And so untangling all of that took like years of therapy. And sometimes people are just like, oh, just eat, you know, whatever. Or they'll joke about like, oh, I wish I had an eating disorder so then I could lose weight or whatever. But it's like a really dark and unhappy place. It affected not just like my mental health, but obviously my physical body, my relationships, my social, everything. It affected everything. It's kind of like I was studying and running and had my eating disorder. And so like, it was really hard for me just to concentrate on like studying because all I could think about was food because I was starving myself. So there's like all these like sorts of things that go along with it. But you can't see it. A lot of people struggle and they're like, look like they're a normal weight, or they might even be overweight and they have like different types of eating disorders. Like they could be binging and purging and you know, isolation and no one might know. So you can't really help someone either unless they want to be helped, which is another struggle that the people around me, I think, felt, was that, like, I denied it for a long time because I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. And so I don't know if there's, like, a helpful way to approach somebody that you might be concerned about, but the only thing that helped me was, like, realizing that my body was shutting down and that, like, I needed help.
Mm-hmm. Is that a common place that people get to before they find help?
I don't know. Everyone's, you know, like, rock bottom is different, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah.
So it could be, like, the dissolution of a relationship or just, like, something spiraling out of control. I don't think it has to be, like, they're butted up against, like, a health issue, but it could be.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're running now, what kind of nutrition do you do? You talked about chews, and do you do gels? How do you fuel yourself in training, and as well as what's your plan for fueling for the 100 mile?
That's kind of still a puzzle I'm trying to work out. Because, like, for 100 miles, like, you need a lot of food, you know? But for my long trip, I don't really like gels. I think the consistency is disgusting.
I agree.
Yeah, it's snotty. It's like, oh, I hate it. But I do use Spring Energy. They're made of, like, real food, mm-hmm. like fruit. So they actually have a shorter expiration date. So be careful, because I have accidentally eaten an expired one, and that does not go well.
Oh wow! Yeah. Well, so
I just sick, but yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Then I like to choose for longer races. I definitely try to eat, like, solid food, something a little more satiating with, like, more fat and protein. Yeah. But, like, my last race, the 100K, I got a little nauseous just from the altitude being mm-hmm. up so high. And so I kind of relied more heavily on liquid calories.
Yeah. So the Tarahumara, in Born to Run, they mentioned a food called, what was it called? Pinole.
Yes.
Have you given that a try at all?
No, but they're going to have that, they said, when we go to Mexico. They're going to have that at the stations. Yeah. Isn't that just, like, chia seed? What is it exactly?
It is. I found there's recipes online. And so and I had the same kind of thing with the gels that you had, that they just, they don't do well for me. And I read Born to Run, and they talked about this pinole, and that the Tarahumara are out there, and they just have a little bit of it, and it lasts them, and it, you know, fuels them for huge long distances. Mm-hmm. So I looked up the recipe. It's masa, what they make corn tortillas out of, and it is toasted, and I think the Tarahumara make the toast the corn first, roast the corn first, and then grind it into masa. But mm-hmm. You can't buy toasted masa. So I just went to the store and toasted it in a skillet and added chia seeds and cinnamon and a little bit of honey. And I found it goes down well.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Maybe I should try that before I go down there.
Yeah, and I put it in Ziploc bags and mix it kind of the consistency of gels. It's a little bit thicker. Mm-hmm. So I can just just tear the corner off the bag and get it down pretty easily.
Interesting. Yeah.
The thing like that I've had with long runs is difficulty eating solid food. And it's like I was fine. The training that I did up to 50 miles was fine. But after 50 miles, I wasn't able to eat the solid food. Just, I couldn't chew it and mm-hmm. just turned. It was difficult. So, mm-hmm. That's something that nobody told me is, like, hey, you know, what you're doing in training might not work when you get into your race. And so
that's a really good point. Yeah. Cause usually the training runs aren't, you know, 100 miles. You don't know how mile eight is going to go.
And you've done, you know, 50 miles and the 100K, which is right at 60, a little over 60. And I have a friend who says the race really doesn't start getting interesting until 60 miles. And that's kind of her take on running hundreds. And I can kind of attest to that. It's like, you know, you get past that 60 mile point and you've never been there before. And something is just That's what I was, is just my advice is just be prepared to adapt, you know, when you get into the later stages of the race, because you know, things may not go the way you expect.
Yeah, that's another thing I like about ultras too, is that, like, you know, there's so many factors, you know, that can influence your race. I mean, things outside of your control too, like weather and the terrain and all these different things. So yeah, adaptability is for sure important, which I think is a good, you know, life lesson as well. But
yeah. So do you have a drive then to kind of test yourself with, is that kind of what your appeal is, the 100 miles? What's kind of your, what's the draw of going farther?
I guess I just kind of want to see how far I can go, which, like, who knows, you know, I feel like maybe that's longer than 100 miles. And I do think that, you know, a lot of it is mental. Like, I've, you know, like in a long ultra, you go through so many like peaks and valleys, and so much of it is mental. Like, that last 100K I did, I was in a kind of like the pain cave for a minute. And then we were doing a down back section, and I was going back, and some of my friends were going out, and I saw them. And then all of a sudden I felt amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, it just like lifted my spirits, you know? And I was like, well, that was all mental. It wasn't really physical, you know? So yeah, I think it is just seeing how far I can go and the kind of like what threshold of pain I can endure kind of thing. I read Born to Run actually when I was in high school, and I was like, 100 miles, this is crazy. But I was kind of intrigued by it back then. And that was, you know, like a decade ago. So it's kind of cool that I'll be going down to Mexico to run with them for my first.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. That is. So how did you get, how'd that come up on your radar and the possibility to go down there? What was that like? Why is like, there's others around it. Why did you say, let's go down to Mexico? What?
Yeah, that's a really great point, because it's not like a small trip. I have to fly to El Paso, and then they drive you to the Copper Canyon. And it's like, I don't know, like a 9-hour drive from El Paso. And I mean, it's all included. Everything's included, the lodging and the food and everything. I think one of my friends told me about it, and then I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, that would be so cool. That would be so cool. I want to do that. So, I saved up some money and signed up.
Wow. that's kind of cool. That's something that I hadn't even, I mean, when you read the book, you know, oftentimes I read things in books, and it kind of puts it outside the realm of, oh, I could do that. I mean, running 100 miles, but, you know, running in the Copper Canyons, and I know other people have done that, but it's like, that wouldn't have been something that would have popped up, you know, even if somebody said, let's go do it. I was like, well, no, that's beyond my ability. Maybe I should be doing some mindset work around that as well. But that's great. So, do you have plans for beyond that? I mean, do you have, you think you're going to go do other races or maybe longer distances?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've been running so long, you know, running is such a big part of my life. So I can't envision myself not running, but yeah, I mean, I love the long races. I love that they're back now. I have a couple that I want to do just here in California. Like, the first 50 miler I did up in Big Bear is called Kodiak. And, that was the first race that I saw in person. I saw people finishing. I wasn't there to compete. I was just there. And, it just like captured my imagination. So, that's kind of the reason I started like doing the longer races, because I saw people finishing them. And, there he is again. I live in a very tiny apartment, so he's just kind of all over the place. But, I have that 100 mile slated for next year, and it's kind of cool, 'cause it goes all the way around a lake up in Big Bear.
Okay.
So you circumnavigate the lake. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, I kind of want to see too, just how the first one goes and see how much faster I can get, you know, and that definitely depends too on terrain. Like, I'm doing a 50 miler in Wisconsin next spring, and that's a lot flatter than what I'm used to. So
yeah,
kind of interesting to train for something that's different like that too.
Yeah. Growing up in Wisconsin, you had some rolling hills. So you're kind of familiar with the, if I remember the geography of Wisconsin, it's very, you know, a lot like most of the Midwest, kind of rolling hills and farmland.
A lot of farmland. Yeah, I grew up on a farm. So a lot of the runs that were just like on country roads where I could run like 10 miles and not see a car, you know, but a lot of flat, like very rolling hills. I mean, pretty in a way, you know, but definitely nothing like mountainous or anything.
Right. Now, you've also written a book called I Like It Because It's Pink. Mm-hmm. Is that I got to get the title right? Yeah. So what, you've did a blog and now you wrote a book. What is your book about and what led you to write? What led you to say, let's write a book?
I think, well, two things. So it's a book of poetry. I should preface it with that. But, I've been writing poetry, like I said, a long time, and I've been performing it a long time. And I just had a lot of accumulated poetry that I was like, well, I should just put this all in one place. But you know, it's kind of like, I was marinating on it for a while because I wanted it to make sense, like how all the poems would fit together. So there are some poems that didn't like make it into the book that I still liked and that I still perform and stuff, but they didn't like fit the narratives, I guess. And it was not kind of like a book centered around love. I was engaged at one point and we broke up and we didn't get engaged. I actually moved to California with him. And so like after that, I was just like, you know, trying to figure out what like a romantic partnership should look like and stuff like that. And then I was also doing like a lot of healing of myself, like self-love. And then I thought a lot about family love. So it's like, you know, it's split into four parts, the book is. So there's like good love and bad love and self-love and family love and how they all kind of intermingle and mix together and how they all kind of depend upon one another. You can't really love somebody if you don't love yourself and all that kind of stuff. And then how much you love yourself or in what way you love yourself is sort of determined by like how you were loved in childhood and how it all kind of interweaves together. So that's kind of the gist of the book. The title I like, and it came from one of the poems is called I Like It Because It's Pink. And one of my friends was like, that sounds like a book title. And then I was like, maybe it should be. So
how does your running, is there a correlation between being able to get out and run and being inspired, you know, the inspiration for your poetry?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just a good thinking time to be out on a run and not have to worry about any other inputs. You know, I like to run without music, or, and sometimes I listen to books or something on tape if it's a long run and I need some distraction. But I like to just listen to my thoughts, and that's sometimes where my best ideas come from. Or when I like am stuck on something and then I can kind of figure it out while I'm running. Cause I don't know, something about moving and thinking and not being, you know, confined by technology kind of, I think, lends itself well to creativity. Yeah.
So you think you do another, release another book?
I think so. Yeah. I've actually been working on something like a little different. Usually I write poetry, but I'm working on kind of a, I don't know what to call it, kind of like the story of like growing up and then my eating disorder and how I got through that and how running was kind of intermingled in that as well. But I don't want to say it's a memoir because I'm too young to write a memoir, but like, but something like that. So that's kind of my next project. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could be like the first installment of your memoir.
That's true. Yeah. That's not a
bad point. You just, my life volume one. And that's, I mean, you, cause you have, I mean, everyone, you've got life experiences and, you know, in any, you know, story about your life, there's going to be things that you include and things that you don't. And, so yeah, I'd say call it volume one and take it. I don't know that anybody else does that, but, I've never seen it done, but the idea just came to me. So I thought that could be possible, so how can people find you and how can people find your book?
My book is on Amazon. Just, I Like It Because It's Pink. I have an Instagram account. My handle is Mick Mountain. That's a nickname that, my friends gave me, and then a separate one for my poetry as well.
Okay. Mick Mountain. So, and then you have a website as well, right?
Anyway. Yes. My blog is called The Prosiest.
The Prosiest. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you get the name McMountain, the nickname McMountain?
Yeah, it started kind of as a joke. I was running in the mountains with some of my friends, and one of them was like, you're so strong on the uphills or something. And then he just was like, oh, maybe we should call you McMountain. And then it just kind of stuck. You know how nicknames do. Mm-hmm. And then they all just call me that. So
are you in a group that they give trail names to everybody?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I've heard of people doing that, and you know, kind of like a la the PCT hikers that do that. But I think not. No, we just kind of, things just stick, you know?
Things just stick. So yeah. some of the, those of you who are privileged get a handle and, and the rest just kind of go to their regular name. Yeah. I've heard about that on the PCT and also the Appalachian Trail. That's kind of, you earn your trail name. And, but I had not experienced it with runners until I offered to pace someone and I showed up and who they are on Facebook is their real name and nobody knew who I was talking about. And and we'd only met through Facebook and I said, yeah, I don't know. This is, I know I'm supposed to be here. I know I'm supposed to be pacing. And, finally I found her trail name is Abby. And I just did not have any clue. And so,
that's interesting.
And then one of the other pacers, one of her friends has the name Gilligan, because he was trying to go to an aid station. It should have taken him just a short time. And, they said he went on a 3-hour trip. So it took him three, he got lost. so like Gilligan's Island was the 3-hour cruise, you know? So,
oh my gosh. Do you have a nickname?
Actually, if our club did that, I would. I was running for the, we call it the Shaustis. It's a solstice run. Near the Saturday nearest the winter solstice or the summer solstice, but this was the winter solstice. And one of my fellow runners came and says, "You're like a metronome," because I just had that consistent pace. And that would be my name if somebody asked me my trail name. That's what I'm going to answer is metronome.
So. That's a great thing to have, though. One of my friends will listen to like a metronome when she runs. Have the right cadence.
And I've started doing that this was before, but this summer I've started running with a metronome and, on trails it's more difficult because there are places you have to slow down. So I kind of turn it on and off, but it is helpful. It's very helpful.
Can you find it annoying? Like the constant?
No. No, because I'm focused on keeping the beat with my feet. And so it really helps me focus in on my body and where my feet are landing and how I'm stepping. So, it's shortened my stride and, there's a lot of good reasons. And then they say the ideal cadence is between 170 and 180. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm usually about 173 on the trail. And so that works well for me. And unless I'm going up a hill,
sure.
When I'm going uphill, it's much, much slower.
Yeah. Or down too, I guess. Right. Like if it's steep enough or.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's really rocky and I have to slow down, but actually keeping a fast cadence, even on technical stuff is helpful. I mean, if you lift your feet, if you're lifting your feet. And so it's kind of like dancing.
Yes. When I first moved to California, one of my friends took me on a trail run and he just skipped down this like rocky downhill section. And I was like, how do I run down this? You know, like I was just like trying to do it, but, it's just like anything, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And now I can run down technical stuff and usually not fall, but I mean, yeah. I think ultra runners fall in once or twice.
Yes. I tend not to fall in the rocky sections just because I'm careful. It's the root that's in the middle of the trail that I don't see that, or the little thing sticking up that I stub my toe on. In the middle of a clear trail, no rocks, no roots around, and there's just that one little hump, and I'll catch my foot on it.
Oh yeah, I think my worst fall ever was actually on a bike path. I think I just hit the curb. I must have caught my toe on the curb or something. But it was like, you know, asphalt. No, I should not have fallen.
Yeah. Well, thank you a lot. I appreciate the time, and we'll have I'll put the show notes together and have people reach out to you if they want to get in touch and to read your blog and. And maybe your poetry. Oh, and you're also on YouTube, right? You perform some of your poetry on YouTube?
Yes, my name on YouTube is just my name, Sarah McMahon.
So. Sarah McMahon, okay. That's good. Well, thank you a lot. I appreciate you taking time to talk to me today, Sarah. And best of luck with all of your writing, and your running, and going down to Mexico.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life. And a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.